ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5, presented by Zadok Jewelers, KFNC and KFNC HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston. Now, this is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from 500 Golf Center in Beaumont. This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
Down and how you doing, Beaumont, B-Town, as we join you on a Friday on the Press Box. ESPN 97.5, 92.5 FM, coming to you live, as I just mentioned, from Beaumont, and more specifically, 5-Under Golf, which is one of my favorite spots that we do remotes from because, well, first and foremost, because it's the home away from home and actually the home of Bo Brown, and therefore I feel very near and dear to this place. And secondly, because of the fact that Bo is from here, he has tipped us off to this phenomenal golf place that inside, outside, food, beverage, and otherwise, including a concert from Pat Green coming up Monday night, is the place to be when you're in the 409. You can come here and hit some golf balls. After hitting some golf balls, you can grab some great food and beverage, see a concert on Monday night like Pat Green, but have a good old time and have all your friends around. And I'm surrounded by my friends today as Tyler Scott is here keeping us on the air, Juggalo Trey back at the studio, and my good friend Patrick Creighton, once again, my sidekick beside me, as we get you rolling for the next 3 hours, set up for your weekend, talking all things sports and otherwise. Pat, you speak for 5-Under.
I do.
I need to speak to Chris about that, by the way. But you speak for 5-Under.
This is a terrific place to come hang out. I've been out here with my friends. I've been out here with the family. Before the show, you and I were just out here at the Top Tracer double-decker driving range outside hitting some shots. You, of course, hitting much better ones than I do, but that's okay. You are a far more accomplished golfer than I am, but I still had fun. Inside, they've got the sim bays, which, you know, if you're not a big-time golfer but you want to have fun with the friends, the family, you can set it up and play on a whole bunch of different courses in the sim bay. Golf meets video games. It's super fun. They got a great kitchen. They got a top-shelf bar, anything you want. This is a great place to hang out and have fun. And you know what? If you're like a serious golfer, they got a great pro shop. You can go in there. They'll fit you for clubs. You get custom fittings. They got apparel. They got accessories. They got all kinds of stuff. It's a great place to come. And on Monday, Texas' own Pat Green is going to be out here on the green performing live and in concert, and that's going to be a great time as well.
I mean, we had him on the show the other day. He's a great dude. He's a Texas guy. They're almost sold out, so you got to get your tickets. You go to the number 5undergolf.com. Doors open at 5 o'clock on Monday. Music starts at 6:30, leading up to the main act of Pat Green. If you follow Pat Green throughout his career, he is a popular dude. He puts on a hell of a show, so he'll be here, so that's fun. But come on out here and check it out if you get out in the 409. It's a fun place to be. Speaking of fun places to be, the Astros felt like a fun place to be would be at home last night to open up a homestand against the lowly Minnesota Twins. I was none too pleased, boys, when I turned on the TV last night and I saw what Dusty Baker put out there for a lineup. More like the B-Squad in a spring training game with the machete at first base, Castro behind the plate, the not-so-hot-hitting Robel Garcia at shortstop. Oh, my goodness. I started tweeting, they're taking the Twins a little too lightly. And then with a ball that, dare I say, Yuli probably would have knocked down her head at first base, one gets by the machete. Fromber didn't exactly have his A game. And before you know it, you're down 4 runs. Not a good way to start the homestand.
It's not, but grand scheme of things, it's one game. You're going to see him 3 more times here. But, you know, part of this is Yuli's still dealing with that stiff neck, and it's keeping him out of the lineup. The other part of it is you got in real late. You know, it was a long flight back from L.A. after an 8-game road trip. So they came in late. They didn't get the usual work they would get in. Dusty had a scheduled off day for Correa, who had played, I think, 16 games in a row since coming back off the COVID list. So he had an off day. And rather than decide, hey, Carlos, we need you to give me one more day here, and then we'll get you off as soon as Yuli's done. He decided to give them both the day off, and because of that, you didn't really have enough infielders.
Can I just call BS at that point? Just with everything you just said? They had Monday off, Pat.
They did.
They've had 2 days off during this road trip. There's no excuse for them having to squeeze one out one more time. Give me one more day, Carlos Correa. Are you kidding me?
Again, this is the Dusty decided. So for whatever reason, Dusty decided he was going to give Carlos Correa a scheduled day off. And it was something that had previously been scheduled. Why it was scheduled? Well, I don't know. I haven't asked Dusty yet. But again, when you only have three infielders left, because you have five infielders on your team, you only had three, and that put them in the weird position of having to play Maldonado at first base.
It was more than that, Pat. It was exactly what we were talking about. From a lineup perspective, I said, look, the other thing I tweeted was, I guess we're going to load management into Major League Baseball yet again with Dusty and company. Because this is exactly when you start talking about, well, why do they have a less than stellar record against sub-500 teams? Because Dusty likes to take it for granted that they're going to win the game. He likes to rest guys when they don't necessarily need the rest, but he feels like, well, this is a time I need to give my guys a little extra, and we're not playing against one of those top teams. Well, these are the games coming down now between now and the end of the season. You got to have. You are neck and neck with the Tampa Bay Rays for the best record in the American League. You can also keep an eye on the fact that the San Francisco Giants are only four games ahead of you for the best record in baseball. If you truly are a World Series caliber team, these are the kind of things that you need to be focused on, because these are the kind of situations you'll be dealing with as you go forward. That's why it's important to me to take care of a team like the Twins. Guess what? If you get more into the homestand and you're really feeling good about yourself and you're going to win a series, maybe then you can rest the guy. Or maybe you can bring him out after the fourth or fifth inning if you've built up a cushion with an offense that's capable of doing that. I hate what they did last night.
At the same time, if they come out and they win the next three, and then you're going into, you know, so you take three out of four, how much are we going to talk about this game?
It depends. Because
we're not going to talk about this game
at
all.
The A's didn't play, okay? So, but in the loss column now, because of the loss, it's what, four? Where it could have been five or six? That bothers me. The team that you now have to focus on. The White Sox thankfully lost, but you're looking at teams that you have to keep an eye on. The Rays have already surpassed the Red Sox as the team for the best record. You are now tied with them. You have a big series at the end of the season coming up with them. So you know that that's going to be even more important. I just like having the big cushion. I like being able to focus on bigger prizes like the best record in the American League and not worried about the fact that Oakland, with all the loading up they did before the trade deadline, is in your rearview mirror and the objects appear closer than they did a few days ago.
I'm not super worried about losing one game. I'm way more concerned about Fromber's struggles early in the game and another three walks. You know, Javier's usage has been so weird. He had trouble managing the strike zone with three walks and two innings as well. I'm more worried about getting Fromber right than I am about, all right, well, they put out a split squad lineup for one game last night. If they drop three out of four in the series, yeah, you probably have a right to be upset about it. They come out and they win three out of four. You're not, this game is going to be a blip. And like I said, Fromber and the walks for the last month are one of the biggest issues this team has to get right. Because the offense overall is still a phenomenal offense. They need Fromber to pitch like last year, not the guy who's coming in and throwing and has trouble with his command, something that plagued him early in his career. What helped him make the jump to frontline starter was he got his command under house. He knew where his ball was going. He wasn't walking the ballpark. He was hitting his corners, hitting his spots. He had true command of all pitches. Right now he doesn't have that. They got to get that straightened out. And when you already have that issue with Jake Odorizzi, who, you know, his every breaking pitch he threw was as flat as this table. All right, they have some issues with their starting pitching that they've got to get some kinks worked out heading into September. That, to me, is job number one.
Let me ask you a question. It's the taboo question, but I believe we can ask it here and we can talk about it rationally. How much does spider tack play a factor into the fact that Fromber is not having the control that he had last year?
It probably plays some percentage. Look, we see guys all over the league who now suddenly don't have the same command that they had before. Now, whether it's the spider tack or it's the, you know, the sunscreen, the bullfrog sunscreen with the rosin, whatever the hell they were using. Clearly, there are a lot of pitchers in baseball right now who are all trying to figure out what their new grips are going to be, how many guys have lost 2, 3, 400 RPM on their pitches. There's a little bit, there's an adjustment period that's got to get on. And this is where the Astros and Brent Strom need to get with some of these guys, like a Fromber, like an Odorizzi. And it's probably not a surprise. Their struggles pretty much follow the exact timeline of baseball's official crackdown on foreign substances, they got to get these guys straightened out, because if you don't, it's great. You'll still probably win the division and you still go to the playoffs, but you'll be out in round one, and that is not the goal for this team.
I mean, that's what I'm focused on. Again, I'm focused on the fact that this isn't a one and done team. This isn't a team that's just happy to be there. This is a team that has higher aspirations that we talked about, can have more ramifications if they can win it all than any other team in baseball. So with that being said, I need the focus to be, and the concentration and the desire to be, the fact that in these final whatever games, last 40 games of the season or less, that's where you have to just ramp up your focus. You can't take days off that aren't like not playing days. You have to put your best lineup out there. You have to, because you do have worries at the starting pitching that you have to focus on. And that is exactly what needs to be the focus. Not the fact that I'm going to need to kind of squeeze out a couple of knocks from a handful of guys that shouldn't be in my lineup at this time of the year. I'm done with all that.
No, but at the same time, we talked about this the other day. Every good team will go on, say, 4 runs a year. The Astros are 21 over. They get on another one of those 16-3 runs, even if they play 500 ball every other game. They get on one of those 16-3s or 15-3s. You're talking about a 96-win team. That's a lot of wins. That's a first-place team.
But you got to have your best lineup to do that.
I don't think their issue is going to be their lineup. To me, the lineup was weak for one game because of how they decided they needed to manage various players. I'm way more concerned about the starting pitching.
I hear you. All right, we got plenty more to get to, and you guys want to join in, 713-780-3776. We don't discriminate. You can call, you can text. We'll take your call or your text. Text it. Put your name on it so we can identify and talk to you directly. Otherwise, you can hit us up on Twitch. You can hit us up on Twitter as we continue to roll on from 500 Golf Center right here in the beautiful Beaumont, Texas, 409 area code. So keep it right where you are. Stick with us. There's more coming up right here on ESPN. And then we'll take it
higher. ESPN. 97.5.
I assumed you knew.
This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from 500 Golf Center in Beaumont. This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
All right, back on the box, second segment of the program, talking some Astros to kick off the show on a Friday from 500 Golf Center. We mentioned Pat Green on Monday. They got Men's Fall Golf League starting Monday, September 13th. 4 guys, 18 holes of golf, Top Tracer technology, 16-team leagues. It's always super fun. Check out 5undergolf.com. We were talking about the Stros. Fellas, if we can't beat a guy by the name of Bailey Ober tonight, with Zach Greinke on the mound at 10-3 with a 3.65, there's more problems than just whatever BS lineup Dusty decides to throw out there. Everybody better be front and center tonight. He better put his best lineup out there, and they better start this weekend off the right way after that crap last night, because I'm still not over it. I'm sorry. I was ticked off about it last night, and then when they cut it to 5-3, it made me even more mad, because making that late run, they wouldn't have had to worry about those last 2 runs had they handled their business earlier on. And no one could hit the ball that was in the lineup anyway, with the exception of Chaz.
Well, you know, again, Fromber gives up 4 early. You were in the hole because your pitcher didn't have his best stuff. Now, would you have liked to have seen more runs? Sure, I would have liked to have seen more runs. And, you know, Correa's probably back in the lineup today, and Yuli will be back in the lineup in the next couple of days, and Bregman will be back early next week. So all the regular bats, they're all coming. It's a long season. I'm not going to fret over one game. I get when you look at it, this that sticker shock value. Because, you know, I put up the tweet with the lineup, and I said, I got a few questions about this. But reality is, when you look at what their current 26-man roster is, if you're down 2 infielders for any reason, that's the kind of lineup you're going to see. Because, well, they don't have enough infielders. You know, they had Yordan play on the field because Michael Brantley needed a day not in the field. So it's one game. There's a lot of games you got to manage. If that one game helped guys get right or whatever the situation is.
Let's talk about that for a second. You leave L.A. after a game, and I get it, it's West Coast time. I've done the trip enough times in the NBA to realize it's a long trip on the way home. It's not 9 a.m. The fact that Dusty said Carlos got home at 9 a.m., and that's why he gave him the night off last night, I have as many questions about him not being rested enough and young enough to be able to bounce back as I do. Why the hell 9 a.m.? Because here's the thing. I don't care if you had to get a meal in and pack up all the gear and do all the things. And look, these guys are professionals. The equipment guys, they're loading up that plane of all the extra gear and everything like that while the game's still going on. But the fact that they probably got out of there, it was, what, an 8:40 start, which is 8:40 Central. So it's 6:40 that time, 7:40, 8:40, 9:40. Even if you go 10:40, 11:40, and they get midnight, 12:30, they leave, I can't see how it could take more than 4 a.m. when you're back. I don't understand.
4 a.m. is still a late night, bro. I mean, again.
They're paid professionals.
Which means that they should somehow, take the gamma radiation and turn into the Hulk when needed. It doesn't matter they're paid professionals.
If Machete's in the lineup, if Castro can play back-to-back.
If your body needs the time, then your body needs the time. And Dusty made the decision, this is what needed to be done. So if you're saying Dusty was feeding us some horse over whatever it is that was going on, okay. But it's still one game.
Okay.
And for the next three games, they're going to get to face the Bailey Obers of the universe. This is where I'm looking for them to start hitting.
All right, so let me throw this out.
Even with the lineup they had last night, there were still six guys in the lineup that you could say should be hitting.
Okay, everybody should be hitting at this point, but that's what I'm saying. The focus has got to be you're not a middle-of-the-road team. You're a team contending for a World Series where every game is important. So now you've got this uptick of all these geniuses on social media and otherwise saying, hey, Josh Reddick was just released by the Diamondbacks. This is the guy you got to go get. He's not a center fielder. He hasn't hit out of his own shadow, which they've seen enough of players that do that. Why the hell would anybody be talking about Josh Reddick at this point?
Well, again, you said social media, and we know what we can do with social media. Takes that and $3, get your ticket on the bus. But there's still aficionado for Josh Reddick because he was part of a championship-winning team, and he was a popular player, and the whole wooing. He was a fan-favorite player. He's an all-hustle guy. He tells it to you straight. He's just not that good anymore. And, you know, aside from the fact his bat has really fallen off, if you watched his last year here in Houston, you saw his defense had also fallen off.
Yeah.
Still has a cannon for an arm, but doesn't get to balls, doesn't track balls as well as he used to. Would coming back to Houston maybe, you know, give him a little rejuvenation, and for 2 months you get a little fountain of youth with Josh Reddick, and he plays really good defense, and maybe he has a couple of hits. If you bring Josh Reddick to this team, he's the fifth outfielder, and he's a defensive replacement for Michael Brantley, maybe.
Unless they send Myers back.
And that's it. It's to send Myers back so he can get regular at-bats again. Because we talked about that yesterday. Having a 25-year-old kid who is hitting the snot out of the ball at AAA, and you bring him up here to sit on the bench every game, you're not helping him continue to develop. Either play him here or play him there.
Yeah, they got bigger fish to fry. And like you said, the big thing with the starting pitching, it concerns me too, whether Urquidy is able to come back or not, and however many starters you need. Look, it looks like Fromber's not the – that's why I said yesterday Lance McCullers is your game one starter in a playoff series right now, because of the fact that at the start of the year, as good as Fromber was a year ago, whether it's spider tech related or otherwise, his breaking ball isn't doing the right stuff. His control is leaking more towards the way it was a year ago when he was struggling mentally with focus as opposed to where he was at the end of the year and how he finished. And Greinke, because he's not a power pitcher, yeah, his record and his ERA says that's your guy, but we all know how it goes in the playoffs. And yes, he could be who he was in Game 7 for you a couple years ago and some of the playoff games he's had, but he's also not a guy that traditionally goes deep or throws hard, and that's why I would lean towards Lance McCullers. On top of that, you need four quality starters. A lot of the guys you're counting on have slipped a little bit. So that is a concern of mine. I look at the Olympic team, and I look at – I mean, I don't think Scott Kazmir is the answer by any means. But I think I'm concerned about maybe a David Robertson so that maybe a Javier can do what he does best and go back to being a starter. I'm looking for wherever I can possibly find that last bit of help that might ease some of the stress as they head down the stretch.
And that, I know we talked about that the other day, but that exactly is the kind of move the Astros should be looking at.
I agree.
Can I bring in David Robertson, put in another proven arm in the pen, and then I can move Javier back into the rotation? I can go with a six-man rotation. You know what? I can go with a six-man rotation if I want to keep McCullers on 5 days and just have Lance pitch every 5 days and rotate the other guys around. Whichever guy I need to skip a start, I can have him skip that start. You have to be concerned about Luis García right now.
Yeah.
He was an absolute first-half revelation. He's really struggled his last few starts, and it's not a – I don't think it's unrelated that as he's hitting his, you know, high career high of innings pitched, he's also starting to fade.
I think my bigger concern here, Pat, is that I don't like going back to the lab and having to experiment and check out different possible solutions right now. I want the stability of knowing when you get Bregman back, and if you get Urquidy back, you're probably healthier than any other team in baseball, and you're set up from that standpoint. We said all season long one of the luxuries you had was your starting pitching. Your bullpen was what needed to have attention drawn to it. It was attended to. You got the bullpen help you needed, but now a concern that you didn't want to have is now you're worried about your biggest surplus, which is starting pitching.
And this is a concern that I addressed before the season started. Because before they signed Jake Odorizzi, everybody in that rotation was going to be on an innings limit except Zach Greinke. He was the only guy you could say, all right, Zach can give us 200 innings. Everybody else we really got to watch. Then you got Odorizzi, and you didn't have to worry about Odorizzi because he's a veteran, and generally he's a five-inning pitcher anyway, so you're definitely not going to get, even if he took the ball 34 times, he's going to give you 180 innings. You don't have to worry about him throwing 230 or something like that and being gassed out. But McCullers, you're going to have an innings limit with. Valdez, Urquidy, Javier, García, all these guys, you had to watch their innings. And look, normally you need 9-10 starters to get through a season anyway. Guys miss starts, guys get banged up, COVID, injuries, whatever it is, you need to have basically 9-10 guys who can take the ball for you and go 5 innings. Well, they have 7, and five of them you have either innings limit issues with, or you have injury issues with. And it's hard to – Jose Urquidy's been a good pitcher for them. And last season in the postseason was very good for them. But he's been on the IL now twice with the same shoulder injury.
Yeah.
How much can we really count that Jose Urquidy is going to be able to go, say, the last 5 weeks of the regular season and then all through October, and that shoulder's not going to flare up again?
No, I get it. It's a concern, but I do. The one thing that I do know is that when he's on the mound, and even after coming back from the first time with the shoulder, he was effective until the shoulder wasn't. So at least I know I can count on him, because that's the thing you got to realize. Now we're not just talking about a middle of the season move and trying to shore up your rotation just to get through a season. Now you're looking at how do I focus and what four pitchers am I going with as my dogs going into a playoff series against whoever it may be. And you know, in the case of the White Sox in particular, you're going to face some horses on the other side that are going to be a problem that you want to match pitch for pitch if you possibly can. I think that's the concern. The Red Sox are getting Sale back, but overall that doesn't worry me as much. But they're going to be certain series in particular where you're going to have to be hyper-focused on who your starters are going to be. And right now it's more of a question mark than a dead-set answer.
It is. And you're really going to have to look at this similar to how the 2000 Mets used to manage a lot of their rotation. They had a rotation with, Al Leiter was a guy who could go a lot of innings and throw a lot of pitches, but most everybody else was going 5 innings, maybe 6 max. They had a really strong bullpen, and you have to manage to the strength. And right now, the strength for the Astros has shifted from the starters to the bullpen. So you need to start, how can I get 5 innings out of my guys and then start making this a bullpen game? Now that you've put the assets into bolstering this pen went from one of the worst in the American League to now one of the best in the American League. Now you've got to lean on them. And you're going to have
but
to get 3 to 4
innings.
But you
don't want
to
get into a game where your starter gives you just like 2 or 3, and now you've got to gas out your
No, you got to get to 5.
Right.
You got to get to 5. But you're probably not going to go much more than 5 unless, you've got McCullers or Greinke who's just dealing. Everybody else, when they get to 5, we're probably ready to say, okay, time to go to the pen. And right now, you talk about, who are my four dogs? Well, Lance McCullers is your one.
Yep.
And because of everything going on with Valdez, Zach Greinke's your two, yep. And you know if Greinke's on, he's going to give you six strong innings. And if Greinke's not on, it's going to be a white-knuckle ride to get through three. And then after that, are we hoping that Jose Urquidy is ready?
It's one or the other. It's because Garcia or Urquidy.
You know,
Garcia or Fromber.
Which of Garcia and Valdez, which one of those guys is going to overcome their summer doldrums?
The yips, whatever you call it, they can't find the zone again. So we'll figure it out. If you guys want to figure it out with us, you can join the program, 713-780-3776. HR&P listener line for calls and texts. Otherwise, it's Twitch and Twitter. He's Pat. I'm Joel. Tyler's here. And Juggalo Trey there. It's all a part of being ESPN Radio right here in Houston, Beaumont, and those in the surrounding areas. Back with more in just minutes. Hang right where you're at.
This is Heisman Trophy winner and College Football Hall of Fame, Mike Rozier, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from 500 Golf Center in Beaumont. This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
Hey, back. Press Box, first hour of the program. As we roll on, we've been talking a lot about the Astros first couple segments of the show, but here's the news of the day. The Buffalo Bills and Josh Allen have reached a six-year, brace yourselves now, 6 years, $258 million deal to keep him in the red, white, and blue of the Buffalo Bills and keep them atop of the AFC as one of the teams competing for a berth in a Super Bowl. So that's a big move and a bold move by Buffalo. As sources say, that deal is close to completion. I mean, look, he's your franchise guy. You got to wrap him up. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. You know, next to Patrick Mahomes, he may be the most electric quarterback along with Lamar Jackson, but he does a little bit better on the passing side than Lamar does. But, you know, in terms of the young quarterbacks rising up through the ranks in the AFC, there's your top three.
The going rate for star quarterbacks in the NFL right now is between $40 to $45 million on average per year. 6 years, man, congratulations, Josh Allen, on securing the bag. Because coming out of Wyoming with his 51% completion percentage, he didn't look like he was going to be a star. And his first year in the NFL, he struggled really bad. He didn't look like he was going to be a star. And he took a big step forward year two, took a monster step forward last year where he was an MVP candidate.
Yeah.
You know what? They got it right. And they don't always get it right, but they got it right this time. The Bills have had a lot of bad quarterbacks between Jim Kelly and now. But this is what you got to pay to keep a guy like that. And it also, you know, if you're a Buffalo Bills fan or you're just a fan of the NFL in general and you see them paying him on average like $43 million a year for 6 years and then they're turning around and go, well, you know, we need an entirely brand new building. But we can't spend 1 cent of our own money to do it. You have to pay for all of it, Joe Taxpayer. Don't you kind of want to hit him with a golf club? And by that, I mean Bill's ownership. Not Josh Allen. Bill's ownership.
Yeah, I mean, look, I get it. The thing that really I take away from all this that I like is it's not a guy that wants to get to a major market. It's not a guy that wants to get to his next destination. He's going, you know what? I like what we're building here in Buffalo. I like what we've been able to do already. I like the fact that when I needed more weapons, they got me Stephon Diggs. They went out and got guys, even a Cole Beasley in the slot, that can help me to even be a better quarterback because I have better resources. Their defense, they loaded up through the draft and otherwise to make them a better football team. And we're not just talking about major market teams trying to add a superstar. We're talking about smaller market teams or mid-market teams locking up their superstar so that they have their franchise quarterback. I like everything about this.
Well, that's the joy of the NFL, right? Is the revenue sharing. Is the salary cap. Is the fact that all teams share equally in the TV contracts, regardless of where they are. So everybody in the NFL essentially has a license to print money. Mm-hmm. Like, every one of them has, like, their own Federal Reserve printing press in the basement of the stadium, just banging out hundreds like crazy. So in the NFL, big market, small market is irrelevant because of the way the league structures its finances. Whereas in baseball, where every team has their own TV deal, and the national, most games are not on national TV, and you know, you do have the whole big market, small market revenue disparity that a smaller market team generally can't put out that kind of contract. This is what makes the NBA so great. This is why everybody loves the NFL, right? This is why the NFL is so great. Every single team, regardless of market, on a rolling 2 to 3 year period, has a shot because money is equal and any team can sign any player without feeling like, oh, I'm marketed out. I can't afford. They can all afford.
Right, but at the same time, you know, you still look at it. You got to get over the way the mean streets are. You're going to have to get by Patrick Mahomes. That's going to be the gold standard of the AFC. But because of the way they played last year in the playoffs, too, and like I said, their full roster, it's not just about what they're going to pay Josh Allen. Now, the thing they got to be cognizant of as this deal gets more into the new extension and the new money is it's gonna suck up a lot of your cap space and a lot of your flexibility financially to go out and continue to keep the players you have and add players you may need so you can compete for the best, one of the best spots in the AFC.
And as we've seen with the quarterbacks that have the monster deals, it becomes a challenge for teams to keep the defenses to be strong enough to get you through the postseason. You've seen it in Green Bay. You know, you saw it in New Orleans. You know, they had to go up and down when they were in Denver with Peyton Manning, where they went from all offense to a team that was all defense, and Peyton was just driving the car. So we've seen this with a lot of teams where look, Seattle's defense, their offensive line, the run game, everything came undone. And they've pretty much been riding Russell Wilson's arm. So the ability to stay as a team, because right now the thing about the Bills that makes them so exciting is they are a complete team. Offense, defense, special teams. This team is maybe the most well-rounded team in the league. How long can you stay that way if you're paying your quarterback?
Well, as we see with Russell Wilson and otherwise, yeah, that's the biggest thing is when you're on a great contract with the quarterback, which you know is the highest paid player on your roster if you're good, you have to try and make sure you capitalize and you know, really strike when the iron's hot before you have to pay him so much money that you're not going to be able to do the things that you've been able to do so far. So that's why it's imperative. Now he's got his deal done. Yeah, it's going to kick in a couple years. Before it gets to that point, you got to strike right now because your window, as much as you'd like to say, sure, he's still going to be on the team. You're still going to be good. But if you have a window to open up and try and get through, I would say it's sooner rather than later simply because of the fact that when that money kicks in, it's going to be more difficult from a front office perspective to add guys to this roster.
So let's look at it from this point of view of how you manage your cap and where the money goes, right? If you draft a quarterback and that kid turns out to be a rising star quarterback, essentially you have from his third year in the league to his sixth year in the league to spread your money all around, build the team up as good as you can. After you do his fifth-year option, or you've done an extension, the fifth-year option is still relatively affordable, you're going to have that 1 year where he's going to have big money, but you still have a good portion of the old defense intact. But after that season, it's going to be really hard to
good
keep
players
that stuff
are going
together.
To be sent somewhere else because they can't manage it. Because it's impossible to keep all those guys and keep him, too, at that dollar amount.
And you've got to be able, and this is something that's made the Patriots so great over the years. Number one, Tom Brady never wanted to take the most money because he made so much more money everywhere else, too. He didn't need it. But you have to be able to manage your cap, and you have to be able to draft guys at least to fit your system. New England didn't always draft superstar players, but they drafted guys who fit in their system perfectly. And then when those guys played well in that system and said, hey, I want to get paid, Belichick said, that's nice, good luck. And those guys went somewhere else, or they got traded somewhere else, and they got their big money. And for the most part, they were never as good.
Well, the other thing is they've been able to grab and go, plug and play from the draft, where their personnel department was so good, not necessarily at skilled positions where they haven't been as good drafting receivers. But when they go out and get an offensive lineman, when they go out and get an outside linebacker, when they go out and get someone from their secondary, basically, by the time training camp's over with the next year after they draft the kid, he's in the lineup. He's ready to go, and he's more, better than serviceable. That's where you put it all together. Bill's in a good spot now. They have their franchise quarterback for then. It's just going to be a matter of how do you manage the dollars to make sense so that you can stay relevant and stay competitive for the long haul now that you got Allen in tow.
And this is what gives bad teams, like this is what gives your fan base hope. When you're able to draft some young players and have a little excitement and say, okay, we've got a new base to build around. Now next year we can supplement with those guys. You don't want to build your team through free agency. You want to supplement your team through free agency. So realistically, if you're a Texans fan, you're miserable right now because your team stinks and you didn't have any high draft picks and there's essentially no hope. Next year, you will have high draft picks. Next year, you will get to draft some guys who hopefully can be franchise changers. Your hope kind of begins next year. This year is going to be a really tough season if you're a Texans fan because there's no Deshaun was your guy.
Yeah, but like I said, that's why you got to embrace the suck for one more year.
One more year.
You have to because it's imperative for your franchise so that you can be successful sooner rather than later. So that's that as we continue to roll forward.
Don't be afraid of the O.
No.
Don't be afraid of the O.
Some of the news of the day there nationally as we get back to Astros baseball and other things. Texans have, of course, still in the midst of training camp. I had to ask you guys the question, but like if there was a tree in the woods and it fell and no one was there to hear it, did it happen? If there was a Hall of Fame game in Canton and no one watched it, did it happen? Does it matter? Does anyone care? I don't know. We'll continue with a whole lot more as we push on from 5 Under Golf Center in Beaumont, Texas. Join us, won't you? It's the Press Box, ESPN.
ESPN 97.5.
All right, back on the box, rolling through the first hour of the three-hour extravaganza from 5 Under Golf right here in Beaumont. Golftoberfest starts the 2nd of October. There's going to be bands, German beers, and games. Details to come on the website. Again, for everything 5 Under Golf, the best thing to do is to go to 5undergolf.com. The most important pressing thing is Pat Green, Monday night, right here on the driving range. It's a fantastic environment. The bays become suites. The green becomes a dance floor, and people get an up-close and personal chance to really enjoy the great music of Pat Green. They're almost sold out. So doors open at 5. Music starts at 6:30. It's going to be Paul Childers, Tristan Mraz, and then, of course, Pat Green. So if you want to be a part of the festivities, you need to get to 5undergolf.com. Then get to Beaumont, enjoy the concert, have some fun. Marcus, shout out to you, my man, big MMA fan, going to the MMA fights at Toyota Center this weekend, but taking good care of us while we're here at 5 Under Golf. We appreciate you, sir. As we were talking a little bit of the main stories of the day, after talking a little bit of Astros baseball. Now, you know, Brother Bear sends to me, well, you know what? The team got back around 6:30, but there was a traffic accident on 59. Okay, again, I'm pretty sure that one, look, having traveled and done this for as long as I've done this in the NBA, the bus driver gets a heads up. People from the plane to otherwise, from the people at the airline to whatever, they always have the best interest of the teams at heart. I'm not going to say it's right, but I also know that police escorts have come into play in the past for teams going to and from stadiums and hotels and airports. But what I'm saying is that it just seemed to me to be way too much time, first and foremost, for how much of time it took the Astros to get from Dodger Stadium to their beds. Secondly, and more importantly, too, from the standpoint, and Kevin Joseph just was tweeting me on this, the bigger issue, too, I have is these are not only trained professionals on the field, they're trained travel professionals, which means you have big comfy seats, you get your sleep on the plane. There's a million ways to do so. And if you don't get your sleep on the plane and you're stuck in traffic, guys could fall asleep in 2 seconds flat if you have the right, if you have your chair to yourself on the bus, on the way from the bus and the airport all the way back to Minute Maid. There's ways to do these things, but the more important thing is you look at the grand scheme of things as it relates to your actual team and the needs of trying to win baseball games down the stretch. He's a young guy. In my opinion, he should have been in the lineup. That's where I start on that, and I know you're going to tell me one more time it's just one game. But I'm just saying from a standpoint of I don't need those to be the excuses. I don't need to be resting some of my youngest players. I need to be focused right now on every single game matters. I don't want to get to the end of it and go, God, they missed out on best record by one game.
in 162 game season, how many one games can you point to?
I get it.
How many bullpen meltdowns could we point to and say, well, if they had not melted down in this game, if they had not given up a late slam in that game, if the bullpen didn't walk seven guys in this game, it's one game. And over the course of the next 2 months, they're probably going to play 620 ball. And again, I'm not going to get worked up over one game because one day the lineup was a little subpar after we had to go a week and a half with four regulars in the lineup early in the season because of COVID. The pitching is my issue. I'm concerned about that because that's kind of been this has now been something that's been going on for a few weeks.
Yeah.
Like getting to a month, it's been taking with some of the pitching and the lack of command and the inability to go deep into games and all of a sudden the ineffectiveness. I'm way more concerned about that. If the pitching gives up eight runs and we score six, well, it wasn't the lineup's fault. Granted, you know, they're when they score three runs, your winning is 50-50.
So if you're scoreboard watching tonight, Red Sox at the Blue Jays, though they're now behind the Rays as the Astros and Rays are tied for the best record in the American League. Mariners, who've been coming on strong in a big weekend series in the Bronx to take on the Yankees as the Mariners and Yankees try to fight for wild card positioning there. The Rays are in Baltimore, so you got to assume if they take care of their business like the Astros are supposed to, the Rays, with the exact same record as your Astros, playing Baltimore in Baltimore tonight. And the A's are hosting your favorite team. What do you call them? The Cut Cup Bangers?
The Junk Grabbers.
The Junk Grabbers, the Rangers
of
in
Arlington
Oakland tonight, if you're interested in that as well. So there's your scoreboard as it relates to teams that are on your radar. I'm missing the White Sox. I'm looking for the White Sox as well.
Well, they're playing right now. They're playing the Cubbies.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
In Wrigley.
Yeah. All right. Chicago, Battle of Chicago Supremacy, bottom of the first scoreless there. So there's teams to keep an eye on the scoreboard as we continue to roll forward. And just other news of the day. I don't think the Texans are in any need of a wide receiver. But Pittsburgh wide receiver James Washington is looking for a trade. He's approached the Steelers about that. So there's going to be a receiver on the market that if you are in such need, you may be wanting to inquire about. 25 years old. His production went down last year. Played just 486 snaps or 44%, but has been somewhat effective. He was only targeted twice last night in the Hall of Fame game. That might have led to even more of his unhappiness. If you need a receiver, then there's another one that you can call. And there's that. Also, Lamar Jackson is out of COVID-19 protocol and all the issues dealing with that. As he is back now for the Ravens, you assume that he will get back to 100%. He will be ready to go. And so there's that off the books as well. Besides that, NBA news to speak up. Reggie Jackson, no, not Mr. October, Mr. Clipper, is staying with the Clippers as he got a two-year deal for about $22 million. Had a really good playoff. Had a lot of people impressed with the way he's kind of found it again. People thought there was going to be a market for him. Evidently not what he thought there would be. But he gets a two-year deal to stay in L.A. with the Clippers, where he was very effective. And the deal that I told you was coming when Andre Iguodala was not his option, was not picked up by the Heat. And he narrowed it down to three teams. And he said it was the Nets, the Lakers, and the Warriors. And I said to you, Pat, he's Steph Curry's best friend. They're golf buddies. He's going back to Golden State to reunite the band. And there was no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Now it's final as Iguodala is going back to Golden State as they try to be competitive again in the Western Conference.
Where do you think Iggy has left?
I don't think he has to have as much as he had the last go-round in Golden State. But if he can still defend and occasionally he can knock down a three, I think he brings enough to the table for a team that's desperately trying to fill up their roster with rotational players. I think he's a guy that he knows the system, the coaching staff. He gets along well with the players. Sometimes you just need a team guy as well. Regardless of what role he plays, he's a guy that's a warrior for life. He's going to fit in real good there.
You think he's like an 8-9 player? Like he's guy 8 or 9 on the depth chart?
I think right now he's back in the rotation guy.
Yeah. Plays 8-9, 10 minutes a game.
Maybe a little more some nights, but yeah. Yeah. So there's that. From Rockets' perspective, as they get ready to leave tomorrow for Summer League, and we mentioned that Jalen Green and his contract is taken care of. He's ready to play. Now there's rumors that Josh Christopher's contract is about done. He'll be there front and center and ready to play for Summer League, so that's a good sign. That'll mean, I believe, they'll be close to signing the kid from Turkey. They'll have three of their four draft picks ready to go for Summer League. And like you said, there's a reason in itself to watch Summer League basketball, because if you're watching this young Rockets team, that's what you really want to focus on. Where are these guys in their development as 19-year-olds? How soon do we think that we're going to be able to see him on the floor being effective? And in the case of a guy like Green, how much does he have with potential and otherwise in his back pocket that leads you to believe he could be the franchise player for this team?
You know, we talked about how, you know, Green playing against, you know, former NBA players and adult men, not college kids, how we think, well, at least I think that helps him a lot. We're going to see, hopefully, the two young big guys they got who are both, these guys were big players in their leagues. Now, granted, they're not, none of these leagues are on par with the NBA, but again, they're 19 years old. So the ceiling for these guys is high. How long has it been as a Rocket fan since your team had, heck with one, multiple young players that had high ceilings, one who could be, you know, star status, that you had the, oh, hey, you know what, these young guys are all going to be on the summer league team. It's been a long time since a Rocket.
Well, how long has it been since you've had a first-round pick, let alone picks that you actually were going to pick and play and realize are going to be key cornerstone pieces of what you do, not just next year, but going forward? Daryl always traded him away or used him as bait to try and get out of him so that he could either stash a guy in Europe if he had to take one, or he could use that spot once he get traded it away so that he could add some veteran players that enticed other veteran players to want to play and be part of the rotation.
And that's been the plan for the last 8 years. So now you get a little bit different look. You get to see some young guys. You get to have that hope springing eternal type feeling of, all right, we were awful, but now we have hope. And that in and of itself, especially if you're someone who has, for the majority of his life, rooted for teams that were really bad and made you miserable. The idea that there is hope, that is a positive. That is something fun to enjoy. And when that hope manifests itself, that's a different kind of feeling, right? When the guys that come through your system are the guys that eventually, you know, bring you to being a top level team and maybe to the promised land. Like when that homegrown team, you watch them from babies all the way up to stardom, that's a different kind of feel than, all right, we had a couple of players, but then, you know, we signed this star, that star, and this star, and they were here for 2 to 3 years. We won a title, then they bailed. Yeah, it's great you won a title, but your window was so small, and then you were right back to being bad. Here you get to start from the ground floor. You build a whole new era of fan and bring them forward. That's fun to me.
Well, the fun starts this weekend in Vegas then, Pat, as you get ready to watch your Houston Rockets take on the best in summer league action, and they get ready to kind of fine-tune these young kids. And get moving towards the start of the regular season, because there's really no downtime. I mean, it's crazy. The season just ended because everything was condensed. There's not much time before they get back to summer league. Before you know it, they're going to be in training camp. Before you know it, they're going to be ready to play again. So the Rockets are back at it. If there's things you guys want to join the show with and things you want to talk about, whether it be one of your three home teams or more, bring it to us, 713-780-3776 for calls and texts. Otherwise, hit us up on Twitch and Twitter. Our number two is coming up next. It's the Press Box on ESPN.
ENT and that gun key, R-I-B-B-A-T, Big Hawk, DJ Screw, Toast Dollar, and Gator.
Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5.